Dunnett, Reel One. So, could I ask you first of all, Miss Dunnett, about your background before the war? Whereabouts were you born and raised, and what sort of family life did you have?
I was born in Suffolk, Bonington, and my parents, I was one of seven children, five girls and two boys, and we lived in Suffolk. And I eventually, after I left school, I went to
What age would you have been when you left school?
I was 16.
Was that usual then?
Well, yes. Well, I mean, in the village schools, they left at 14. But we went on at 16. And then after, like, a secondary education from 14 to 16. And then I did some nursing to begin with, waiting until I was 18 to begin my nursing training. And then I went to work the Chelsea Hospital for Women to start with. And I worked there for 2 years and got my part one of my state registration. And then I went on to Queen Mary's Hospital at Stratford, the East End, and did the further 2 years until I qualified. I then went back to, when I was fully qualified, I did a lot of theatre work. I was very fond of the operating theatre. And I did theatre work there. And at the end of my training, I went back to Chelsea Hospital for Women as a ward sister. And it was, I worked there until 1939. I was on the reserve of the QAs. Secretary of Queen Mary's Hospital was a retired army officer, and he encouraged those of us that passed our final state examinations to go on to the nursing reserve, and that's how I came to join the QAs.
So that would have been what date when you were in there?
In 36 I qualified, 1936.
What was known about the QAs then?
Well, I knew nothing. But the arm being, having been in the army, you see, Major, I've forgotten his name just now, but he was frightfully sort of the military type and awfully keen. But he thought that the half a dozen of us that passed our exams that year, he thought we were a fairly bright lot and it would be rather nice if we were on the reserve. Mm. He obviously had a feeling that something was coming up. I'm sure inside. And then, as I say, I went on to Chelsea, and it was while I was there, in 39, that I was called up and I went down to Netley.
When you first went into the QAs as a reserve,
were
you given any special training?
No.
So what did it mean, being on the reserve?
We were just said, in time of war, we might be called up to nurse in the army, you see, or in the, you know, wherever we were in any sort of area. And so it was just like we were very young and we thought very little of it. We didn't think it would ever happen. We did.
Of course, I'm thinking if you were born in 1916, this would have been...
I was born in 1912.
This would have been... So you would have been a young child during the Great War, wouldn't you?
Well, I remember the end of the Great War. The only thing I do remember it was that the day the war finished, my mother called... We had a big porch over the front door, and Mother went to the bedroom window and got out the Union Jack and put on that. That's all I remember. I remember she was so delighted as it was all over.
Mm. Were any of your family involved? Your father?
Yes, my father was in the Boer War. And he was then later, he went into the police force. And he was in the police force. And he was exempt naturally from the Second World War. Or the First World War, because he had some injury, and in any case, it was a reserved occupation. And what comes after that now?
Yes, so it's really 1939.
Well,
yes, did you have any idea of the events from 1933 in Europe? You know, the rise of Hitler.
Oh,
did it impinge?
Oh, we knew. Yes, we knew. I think that in 36, 37 onwards, we knew what was going on in Germany. And we did take an interest then. But we didn't think that it would come to war. But it was in the last year, it was in the beginning of 39, we knew it was imminent.
Do you remember the actual day when war broke out? What you were doing and how you reacted?
Well, it was on a Sunday morning. We got the warning, didn't we? And I know that we all went down to the basement. The sirens went, and we attempted to get out of the basement. I don't remember whether we took the patients down or not. But that was the beginning of it. And then, of course, the next day I was packing up and going off.
So that was...
We were told where to report in the event of general call-up.
So it was really, from what you're saying, a very immediate mobilisation.
Well, very much so, very much so.
So what happened to you then?
Well, I went down there, and I had no uniform, but I just went in my... I took my own uniform with me. And as soon as I got there, I was put into the operating theatre because I had that much experience. And they were very busy patching up all of those that had come back from the various hospitals. You see, they were cleaning out the hospitals in the Middle East and round about. And we were there, and I was there until.
Yes, whereabouts was this? Whereabouts were you sent?
Netley, the Royal Victoria Hospital, Netley. Now that was a fabulous hospital. It looked out on Southampton Water. It was a beautiful place. It's no longer there, unfortunately. But it was beautiful. But there was a story going round that the plans were mixed up with those in Bombay, and so we faced the wrong way. We should have faced the other way, I must remember. All the windows were on the overlooking the river. But in the operating theatre, we saw the ships coming down off of in the middle of an operation. We'd look up and see one of the queens or one of them coming down. You know. It was fabulous. But I was only there a very little while because it was in December that I was sent to the Atlantis.
And in the interim, you know, having been from September to December at Netley, had you had any sort of initiation into the QAs? You know,
No, not really. I think, you see, because I was in the operating theatre, I didn't have to deal with patients and rations and all this sort of thing. The people on the ward, the sisters that had the, was being initiated on the ward to all this army jargon. They had quite a time of it, but I was spared that because I was in the operating theatre, mercifully. And so I was there until, I said, December.
And by this time, had you been given a uniform?
Oh, no, I think that we were given we were told what to do, that's right, we had measurements. Boyd Cooper in Hanover Square were the suppliers, and gradually we got our uniform together, and also we had to have a tropical kit. That came later, of course.
And was that paid for by the QAs?
Well, I think we were given an allowance. I don't think it covered it. But we were given an allowance, of course. But you see, we had a great coat and these beautiful hats before in those days. And we had grey dresses with the red borders, you know, the reserve. Didn't have full red capes. They had grey capes with a border of red at the reserve, you see, just to distinguish us from the others. And then, as I say, we first of all, it was the winter time. We didn't have our tropical kit then. We went out on the Atlantic. Our first trip was to go out to Alexandria and pick up the wounded or the sick from the hospitals in Alexandria and take them back and record in at Malta and Gibraltar and pick those up.
Were there many?
Well, we were seemed to be pretty full. You see, to clear out, there were large hospitals out in the Middle East. They come from Bombay as well. They come from all of these hospitals. So we took, and it was a very large, we had about 1,200 beds, you know. was a big ship, the largest of them all.
And what was the, you know, the equipment of that ship like?
Oh, it was pretty good, really, on the whole. I, again, was given the operating theatre, and it wasn't too bad. I had two orderlies who were wonderful. And they did this sort of sterilising and what have you. And it was a bit primitive in some ways, but the operating theatre of the day, I mean, doesn't compare. But on the whole, we had quite enough equipment, drums and good surgical instruments. And yes, that was quite good, really, on the whole.
Would there have been much danger on that journey?
Well, on that journey, no, not in the very beginning. No, not at that time. And then we came back, and then eventually, you see, we were sent up to the Holy Loch. We went to Falmouth, first of all, and were equipped from there, partly from there. And then we went up to the Holy Loch, and we were fully equipped there to go out to Norway. And dear Lord Nuffield provided us all with the most wonderful, wonderful overcoats, because he said it would be terribly cold. It was too, very cold.
And would that have been on the same ship?
Oh, yes, it's always the possible ship Atlantis. Yes.
Yes. And when you say you were re-equipped, what can you remember?
Well,
additional...
Well, we had to be fully equipped for... I think the stores, really, I suppose. Not as far as the surgical equipment goes, but with the stores, we had to be fully equipped to go out there. We didn't know how long it would be. We went up to Norway twice. We went up there in the first instance, and... we took off, well, the first time we went out there, we had all the casualties from the Polish destroyer, the Grom. And we took those on. And they were nearly all pebbles on that occasion.
So what area of Norway would this have been? Do you remember?
Yes, Narvik. East Scanlon. I'm not sure if I've got that. Oh, no, I've got it not.
Yes. Can you remember the arriving in Norway and what, you know, the sight was that you...
Oh, beautiful. All these lovely snow-covered mountains and the fjords. That's all I remember. It was pretty far north. It was very cold. Of course, a lot of icebergs on the way. I remember at night, you didn't sleep because the hooters were going the whole time and watching out for icebergs.
And these casualties, where were they from the Polish casualties?
On that occasion, but the Chasseurs Alpine, the Chasseurs, the French, they were out there once at the time, and most of them, they were all French or Polish. We had very few British casualties at that time, and some POW Germans. Horrid they were, too. Behaved badly.
So, given that you had 1,200 beds, would the ship have been full?
No, we were not full on those occasions going out. But I should think we were at least a half to two-thirds full. And then, as I said, we came back.
Yes, before you come back, if I could ask you a little more about these. What sort of injuries were they? Were they very badly injured?
Oh, well, they were gunshot wounds, a certain amount, but... limbs and that, you know, there were, and head cases, the chasseurs and those, but the poles, a lot of them were quite, as far as I remember, I mean, they're all pretty badly wounded, they were all cot cases, they all had to be, there were very few walking cases.
Did you have any problems with language?
Not really, they joked really with us, you know, and we picked up the odd words, but not with the poles, with the poles. But some of them, quite a few of them, had a little English, and that we managed quite well. They indicated what they wanted, where the plane was, and we kept them. Yeah.
These German POWs, were they kept separately?
Yes, we had to, because on the second occasion out there, there was a German pilot, and he was boasting. They came and tried to stop us strafing the ship. But he had no fuel, he had to go back. But he was boasting that if he could have got back, he would have put a bomb on her. Oh, yes, I remember that very well indeed. And I don't know if he was shot down or what happened, but he came on board as an injured case. and we put him in a cot and put him in irons so that he couldn't get around because the Poles swore they would kill him if they could get at him. There were a lot of the Germans were so young. They were only children, you know, boys of 16. And they were real little Hitlerites. I remember trying to give one a cigarette. You know how one does it with all of them, try to treat them as patients. And he just spat in my face. I always remember their horrid things. Mm. They behaved badly on those occasions. But we came back, and then the most exciting thing for us was that on the return journey the second time, we met the Scharnhorst. I can show you in one of his books.
In Churchill's book, you're mentioned, you say.
No, well, the Atlantis, how she was met by the Scharnhorst. But we had some...
Yes, well, could you tell me about that? You know,
it was identified. We had a young RAF officer on board. He'd been injured at some time or other. I don't know how he came to be on board. And he identified the Scharnhorst. And she sunk her transport ship, which was empty, in our sight, but she left us alone. We returned, you see. And we got back. And then, of course, we met the Glorious and the other. Destroyers with her, and they all lost. She sent them not out there.
Mm. Did you see any of that?
You see, we were not allowed to go to the rescue of those people. There were only a few people on board this transport ship. I think it was more or less empty. But the Geneva Convention prevented us from going to the scene of a disaster. You see. So we didn't go back, but we did meet the Glorious, and our captain obviously told them that we'd met the Scharnhorst up the road, as it were.
Yes, there's quite a lot of controversy about the Glorious at the moment, I think, isn't there?
And the captain. I've heard so much about it since that I think it was an awful tragedy. Never have happened, we should never have lost all those men.
You were obviously on a very dangerous mission then, weren't you? You know, to be... this would have been during the Battle of Narvik,
yes,
presumably.
Yes,
did you see any signs of the battle?
No, none at all. But we did have to move one night from one fjord to another because they were getting sort of close, but otherwise we didn't see them. We did see occasionally the Alpine... still just, you know, in a white scheme across the mountain. But apart from that, we didn't see any of the battle. And we didn't see any of the sea battles. We made straight for, where did we go to? The Orkneys, to Scotland. Mm-hmm.
The Atlantis, was it very obviously a hospital ship?
Oh, yes, very much painted up. I wish I had a big picture. I had a lovely painting of it. I can't remember it now.
What was it that distinguished it as a hospital ship?
As a hospital ship, they had a very... Oh, it was white, all white, and a very wide green band around this. And then there was, on the chimney, there was a lit-up Red Cross. Red Cross and very distinguished, the hospital ships. Yes. As anyone could see it, and we were used to be lit up, except, of course, if we were lit up at night, but not in port and places like that.
And the medical staff on the Atlantis, what sort of proportion of QAs would there be to other medics, do you think?
I think there were about 12... I think there might have been, let me see now, about 12 or 16 nursing sisters and a matron. The matron was a regular. And there were about 14 nursing sisters.
And you would, all QAs would you have been? Yes.
Reserves, all reserves.
And how about the orderlies?
Came, you see, the RAMC orderlies. But a lot of them had been conscripted. And they had come from all walks of life. There's one very delightful young man who was hoping to be a poet one day. I think he was sort of hoping to be a book. Charming young boy. I had him in my operating theatre. And another boy who was had been a farmer, labourer, and he was an awfully nice chap and so good. one of them, very protective, you know. Yes.
And the doctors, would they
well, have... The doctors we had, very interesting, we had well, the colonel in charge on our side of the city, and then we had a medical officer, chief physician, and it was James Bridie, the author, you know, James Bridie, he was the one, his delightful chef, Mr. Plibridge with him. And then we had a dental surgeon, and two other. So I suppose we had about six, apart from the colonel, about six doctors on board.
And on the return journey, you know, having loaded up
yes.
with the wounded, were you busy the whole time?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, our dressings to be done every day. If we were not operating, I had a ward of 93 beds as well I was responsible for. Yes. And I can tell you more about that later, on a later voyage. But out from Norway, I mean, we were kept busy the whole time. Wounds to be dressed and you know, things to be done. And
were there many new deaths? Do you remember?
I think on that particular occasion we didn't have about two or three deaths. They were buried at sea, of course. Mm. But there was not so much surgery to be done there, just a few minor things on that occasion.
This must have been a very different life for you, though. You know, how did you take to it? Yes,
well,
that.
I don't know. We were young, and you know, when you're in your 20s, you can do anything. You can adapt so easily, can't you? I think so. We just took it for granted. We just took the rough with the smooth. We had good times and bad times.
Were you worried, though, you know, during this yeah. time
Never
on the sea?
There's only one thing. I think I was more worried. Later on in the Suez Canal, when the pilot was put on board, and he was a witty Frenchman, tried to block the canal. That was a different state after we left Norway. All of our casualties we brought back eventually to Liverpool. And that's where we set out again for the Middle East.
So, once in Liverpool, were they sort of transported to a military hospital?
Yes, I presume. Once they'd gone, we didn't know what happened to them afterwards. They went to various places all over the country, you know. Yes.
At that stage, was the system working well?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I think so, very well. Yes, I don't think there were really any... cock-ups, as they say. I think on the whole, things went very well. And we stayed on board until all the casualties were off. And then I think we probably had a night out on the town and went to the Adelphi, you know, the evening after that. And then we probably had to go back again. And I know we finally went up, we finally left for the Middle East. We had to go around the Cape at this stage, you know. And that's when things were a bit dicey. But, because we'd always gone through the Mediterranean in the beginning. But when we finally left Scotland, the Holy Loch, and went out to the Middle East, we went around the Cape. It was quite a long voyage. We called in at Freetown on the way to pick up a parson. We'd lost our clergyman. I think he'd been left behind. Yes, we had two Church of England and... I think we had three, a Catholic and a, yes. And the Catholic priest was a monk from Buckfast Abbey. Most entertaining young man. But then we went down, as I said, around the Cape. We had to put in to Durban because we'd hit something on the way. I don't know what it was, but the propeller was gone. And so we were put into, parked out on various families, which was rather nice for a week. And that was a break. And then we went up to Suez.
You were saying this was more risky.
Well, I think that we had to sort of be more careful, I think. But I don't know. I think we were very fortunate. I think either the enemy observed the Red Cross. Well, I don't know. But at least at that stage, I think that it was pretty all right. And then we started this run of evacuating from Cairo in Alexandria. The wounded, we went across to Bombay, or down to Durban. We had did these runs several times.
And these wounded, you were evacuating
then?
Oh, yes,
they were wounded, yes. But they did need attention. I mean, I spend my morning in the operating theatre assisting the surgeon with operations, and the afternoon I spent changing plasters because of the heat. You know, the maggots used to get into the wounds. And I used to take them off, and I was ticked off about that by the captain because I was seeing the plaster cast overboard, and he said that it was giving the away sort of information to the enemy, so we had to stop that. But that, as I say, went on, and we did this several times, and it was really, they were very busy times. And we'd come back empty, and on one occasion we came back empty, and a destroyer signaled to us and said they had a man on board with an acute appendix, could we take him on board? It was in the Red Sea. And the ship was empty as far as casualties were concerned, but I was there in the theatre, and we got the theatre ready, and we took this young man on board. It was a very nasty ruptured appendix, a very smelly. But the anaesthetist, he just fainted, you see, the heat. So I had to send him to get someone else. Eventually the colonel came and gave the anaesthetic because everyone else was fading out. There was just a surgeon left one side of the table. I was the other. And there was the orderly just mopping our brow with our perspirations going to the wound. It was really quite something. It was really, you know, real hair-raising stuff. But it took quite a long time to do that, I remember. But anyhow, the young man recovered and we all got over it. And there was another occasion when we'd been evacuating Italian wounded, prisoners of war. A lot of wounded, and there was one young man, he'd been a purser on the Rex, which was the Italian liner, and he sang, and he would, when I went round doing the dressings with a trolley, he would accompany me, and as soon as I'm there, I got sick of it. They were great ones. As long as they had their spaghetti, they were very happy.
I suppose that the wounded would have been from the various battles in the Western Desert.
Yes, Western Desert. Yes.
Were they? What sort of wounds were they?
Oh, all kinds. There were gunshot wounds, splinter wounds, lots of head cases. And later, when I left Aden, when I finally left the ship, and in 42. And was transferred to Cairo. I'd already had enough, you know, then. And I didn't put in for the transfer, but we were asked, and I said, I'd like to go ashore. So I went into this hospital, the 15th Scottish in Cairo. And there, we had a psychiatric ward as well. You could imagine what those some of them were like. But again, I mostly did theatre work. And we had wonderful surgeons. And these, a lot of the head cases, poor men, they were so batty, but they were up and about. And I met some people in Cairo, and I remember some of the officers. I'd gone out one night to the sporting club. And we met a young man, and he was working for Shell. And his father was a very wealthy man, and I asked him if I could borrow a car to take some of these chaps out to the zoo one day. And they're all head cases, and I kept them holding hands with these dear boys, you know, and just like little children, it's awfully sad. And I do still remember the next day when I took them back, I took them there, and I took them to Lena House for tea. And when they were talking next day, someone said to him, what did you do yesterday? And he said, we went to the zoo and we saw elephants and lions and Americans and mixing them all in your dressing. They're so sweet. Oh, those head cases were touching, really, very. But we used to entertain them as much as we could. We lived on houseboats on the Nile.